Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide. This is going to be a great show. We have a full house today. We have my partner in crime, Letitia.
Hey!
We have our good friend and publicist, Paula Stoyer.
Hello, hello.
And of course, last, certainly not least,
Paul!
I'm telling you, there is a lot of good-looking vibes going in this room today. You guys have all dressed to the nines, all looking sharp today, and we're going to have a holiday party that everybody is going to wish they were at.
So, and I think you're right. I think you're right. The focus of today's show is going to be on what's on everybody's mind. What wine do I have for the holidays?
Yeah.
Right, Paul? Is that what's on your mind?
It's always on my mind. I'm thinking, should I do Boone's Farm or should I do Thunderbird this year?
Well, we may take it up just a step. Can't guarantee, but we're going to try. And I think a good way to start the show is by, if we're talking about wine, maybe we should drink wine. What do you think?
Excellent idea. You said champagne. I said what time?
Okay. So what we're going to start with is, to that point, champagne, which happens to be my favorite of all wines.
You said that, and that surprises me, because there are so many great wines out there, and there are great champagnes, too, but champagne, I wouldn't think, would be your first choice.
It's a personal choice, of course, but there are great wines, but nothing greater than a great champagne.
Okay.
So, Paul, what's the difference between... Hold on.
I actually do know something about this stuff.
Ooh, one of my favorites.
That's the sound that makes everybody smile.
Okay, Paul, what's the difference between champagne and sparkling wine?
Champagne is only made in Champagne, France.
Wow, Paul.
It's a brand.
Correct.
You can have sparkling wine anywhere, but if it's to be called champagne, it has to be from Champagne, France.
Don't let the cargo pants fool you.
Exactly.
You know, I laugh, but I really do enjoy wine a lot, and I do know something about it, having worked in the bar and restaurant business a lot. I owned a bar for a long time, and so got educated about a lot of stuff. And my wife worked for a winery for a couple of years after she got laid off from a bank job. So we're a little more dangerous than we look here.
All right, Paul.
Paul, I love that every time we're on the show, we learn a little bit more.
Open up a little bit more and tell you.
Sooner or later, we may start interviewing you.
Oh, no. I'm the man behind the curtain. Nobody knows. I'm secret. But no, I'll tell you, most people do not know how to drink or pour or consume wine. It's too many parties I go to, they have good wine, but crappy glasses, or they have a wine and it's matched with the wrong foods, or it's just a mess. So I'm looking forward to really telling people more.
Yeah, don't get me started. Actually, Letitia and I were out with clients the other day, and nice restaurant, and they had a great wine list. Actually, I brought a nice bottle of wine, and they came out with these glasses that were less than desirable.
Yeah.
He's being kind.
Yeah.
So I actually asked, do you have any better glasses, like big red wine glasses?
Because it does make a difference. People think I can just drink it out of anything, out of a Dixie cup. No, it's the what you consume it in has an effect on how it tastes and smells, certainly, if it focuses the nose and all that stuff.
That's true. And before we go any further, I think now is the time
to
have a holiday toast.
Yes.
All right. To a great holiday, to great people. Here we go. Paul? Yeah, really? Gonna leave us hanging?
Paul doesn't want to cheers us.
Yeah, he just wants to drink.
Now, just the fact that it makes a noise. My father was a big believer. My father was a classy guy. And he would always go and just tap the glass to see if it would ring. Because good crystal rings. If it's cheap or plastic, it doesn't ring. Now, I don't know if that makes a difference in how it tastes, but it sure makes a difference in how you feel.
That's true.
Bart, so, what are we drinking?
So we are drinking Louis Roederer. From Champagne, the Champagne region of France. So what else is, you know the answer, what else is Louis Roederer famous for?
That
Crystal.
I don't know.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, really?
The good publicist
job.
Is right.
Yes. Well, she's a walking brand statement. She's got Yves Saint Laurent, this and that.
So,
wow, this is good. Describe what this is. What makes this so, some champagnes are, I almost want to say bitter or something, but they have a bite to them or something. This is very smooth, but it's very flavorful.
So, okay, so there's a big process in Champagne, of course, and to be truly called Champagne, not only does it need to be made in Champagne, but it has to be, there's a method, which... Yeah.
Champenois. Yeah, right.
Right? And it's a whole process of spinning the bottles and corking it and then letting it basically leak out and then recapping.
Because they're basically doing what? They're infusing air into it? They're infusing bubbles into it somehow here?
Yeah, through sugar and yeast. Mm, that's okay. What causes the bubbles.
Okay.
And so Louis Roederer, one of the most amazing, I think, especially the Cristal.
Wow.
And here in the States, they have also a winery. And, of course, they can't call it Champagne. So it's Louis Roederer sparkling wine, which I don't remember which.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the
so here in California somewhere?
It's Champagne. Mm-hmm. So I actually did bring from France.
Okay.
So here's another trivia. So it is method Champenois, and there's other ways to make sparkling wine. So in any other region in France that uses method Champenois, what do you call sparkling wine?
Garbage. No.
No. It's actually really good.
Really good.
And it's a good deal because it's not made in Champagne.
So it's not made in
Prosecco.
Champagne, France.
No, that's it's Italian, but very good, and it's made in a slightly different style.
Okay.
Oh. So you're talking about, say it again, you're looking for sparkling wine not made in Champagne, France.
But made in method Champenois.
Made in the same way. There's a name for that other than just sparkling wine? I don't know.
It's called Cremant. C-R-E-M-A-N-T, Cremant.
I've seen that.
So that's a way if for anyone's listening that's like, hey, I want, you know, the real Champagne style. I want to save a couple of bucks. You look for a Cremant. So it's made the exact same way, but out of Champagne.
There you
same
go.
Style.
I'm over here taking notes.
I know. I'm learning so much right now. Okay.
Can I ask you another one that you see a lot of in stores? And I don't have as sophisticated a palate as you do for this stuff. Spanish champagne.
Yeah, so that's a cava.
Yes, I've seen lots of those out, and so they're less expensive.
Also made method Champenois, but made in Spain. Different grapes, varietals, which we'll talk about here in a second. Really, really good. Also, there's a kind of a hierarchy of what I look for.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always going to go for champagne mm-hmm. when and wherever possible.
Why not? Right.
Go for the best.
Go for the real stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Right? Now, most of these are not available in restaurants. Kind of depends. So then a Cremant. Cava is third. A sparkling wine from California, especially the right regions of California, like mm-hmm. Sonoma, where they have the right varietals, which we'll talk about. And there's going to be people out here that are not going to like me for this.
Uh-oh.
But I avoid Prosecco.
I love Prosecco. That's okay. More for me, less for you.
I have never even heard of it nor had it. Is that Italian sparkling wine?
It is Italian sparkling wine made in its own style in a much more kind of a mass-produced method. So a little less expensive to manufacture, a little bit sweeter. Not my thing, but it is some other...
I'll drink what Bart won't, so we're good.
Well, Paula's a little bit sweeter. You know, she's just that kind of person, so... All right, and so, is that it? Those are the four styles of champagne. There is real champagne made in a champagne style, but not in Champagne, France. Cava, which is a different method of making it. Sparkling wine, which is another method of making it. And then you're saying this Italian one that I forgot already.
So cava is made in the method Champenois.
Right.
Some sparkling wine here in California can be made method Champenois.
Have you ever been to, I know this isn't one of the greats, but have you ever been to Thornton's down in Temecula? Or whatever they call it now. They used to call it Thornton's. I forgot what they call it now.
No, actually I haven't.
Because it's the only place I know they make champagne in Southern California.
So,
and what I learned from that is you can use different grapes, as you're going to talk about. I always thought champagne was always just white or
Speaking of grapes, you mentioned a few times different varietals and different grapes. Tell me more about that.
So what in a champagne style, there's three varietals, two that are primary.
Primarily used? I would think Chardonnay because it's white. But
That's actually correct. You get a point. Point for Paul.
Ding. All right.
There's a second one.
Pinot. Pinot, maybe?
Pinot
Noir?
Grigia.
Paul, yeah, you're starting to worry me that you know a little more.
Gordon, you thought I knew. Come on.
And there is a third that can be used, but it's on a real limited basis. But it's a legit champagne style.
That one I don't know.
Yeah, no one's going to. Pinot, I can't even say it right. It's going to sound bad. Manure?
Pinot manure. Oh, I've had too much of that in my life.
So let's just go back with the primary. So it's Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. But if you see a sparkling wine or a champagne that says Blanc de Blanc, what do you think that means?
White of white. I don't know what that means.
So it's just the Chardonnay grape.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
But even though we're drinking this, and I haven't actually looked at the bottle, most likely it is Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, but they spend less time with the skin.
I know. That's
it'll
so
say,
interesting.
It'll say, can you tell us? But how do I know?
Sure, if I brought my glasses. It'll say back here usually.
Wow,
we're
this
on
is
the
good.
Hunt.
Okay, so
wow,
this is good. Product of France. I see that. The Rhine. I love the Rhine, by the way.
Okay.
But so it may or may not.
I don't see it, Art.
Okay. So, Brut, that means it's dry.
Oh, well, yeah. What is Brut?
Brut means it's brut dry. Mean? Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Because it can be.
I didn't know that. I like Brut.
Because it can be sweet or dry, right? Well, if it's sweet, what's it called?
There's different levels of Secco. No, not Prosecco, but Sec. They use that. SEC is French for.
I don't get
like
enough.
Sweetness.
I don't get enough Secco. I don't know. I'm not sure. That's a whole other story.
We're gonna stick with Brut.
The show's taking a turn.
But bump.
Hey, I'm gonna fire you in a minute here.
I've only had one half of a sip, and I'm already.
You know how this is gonna
time.
Go.
All right. So yes. There is, and now, so. There's actually one sparkling wine in California that can actually call itself Champagne.
Really?
Yeah, and I can't remember
why. Because they bring the grapes over from Champagne.
Somehow they got approval from Champagne, so it's one of the it's one of the Champagne houses that somehow got approval here in California.
Huh.
And I can't remember off the top of my head, but
that's interesting.
I got called out at actually one of our client wine dinners.
At Cristal, when we were there, he was telling us about that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
There is a debate. I know this isn't about Champagne, but there's a debate up in Oregon because they're trying to protect their brand of Pinot Noirs. And there's somebody down here that buys the grapes from Oregon and then bottles them and calls it an Oregon Pinot Noir.
Because that's where the grapes are from.
That's where the grapes are from.
And they got beat up and they said, nope, you can't say that. And that whatever there are regional boards that administer these things. And
they're called ACAs.
Yeah.
Or AVAs.
And they sued and actually... prevented this winery from using that terminology because these are all perfected. It's like champagne. It's all protected brands. Or tequila. Tequila from real tequila supposed to be from tequila.
So what does the AVA stand for those novices?
American Viticulture Association.
So that's like a governing board over...
Yeah, like Napa has several, Sonoma has several. They break them down. There's actually in Temecula, San Ynez. I forgot the number. I know I passed it for my test, but I couldn't tell you the number, but they're all specific.
In there. Okay, got
Oregon
it.
Has a few.
Right.
And then getting to Oregon, because the primary grapes that Oregon grows are Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, so probably no surprise, they make a really, really good sparkling wine.
Now, can I ask you another question here? Because real good wine is from a specific region, a specific wine. It's not a blend. They harvest the grapes, and those grapes from that vineyard are what they use to make it. I know in France and Italy and other things, they have different ways to calculate stuff. But in California, you're supposed to be known by... You're either a blend or you're a specific grape and year, right?
Oh, Paul.
I'm struggling.
Paul.
I was doing good there for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, you just... I brought you down a couple of numbers. Right.
I guess what I'm saying is champagne a blend or is it a... just one
so
grape
depends.
From one.
So you can so and I'm gonna address what you just said.
Yes.
Because there are some untruths in what you just said.
Yeah, I realized I was saying it. I was flopping him. But go
so
ahead.
With regards to sparkling wine or champagne, what's considered better if it's a vintage? That means
that's
that
all of the
grapes that year came from a particular vintage.
That's what I was looking for.
Okay.
Most champagne, however, is non-vintage and. It might
so it's not 1984 or something.
Yeah, so much
it'll
sense
be.
Now.
They actually put them all in a vat, and then they'll just and it's really, really, really good. There's no problem. It's just that it's
that's what I was trying to get at. I was struggling to. I forgot the word vintage. Yeah, sorry.
So I wanted to understand, Bart. If you can,
you want to understand Bart from today's show? Is that what you said? You said I want to understand Bart.
Paul is on a.
He's Paul's on fire today.
He's not
going to
be drinking anymore.
I don't get to drink like
Paul
this.
Paul is not drinking on our show anymore.
<good.
laughs> So as I'm preparing for dinner on Christmas and New Year's and the holidays, and I have friends over, I am not as skilled in my wine selection, and I am looking at let's go to a wine place and say, okay, I want to be able to pick out the right wine for my dinner. Can you help me in what that looks like and kind of what pairs well so everyone enjoys my dinner and I have at least enough knowledge to be able to be, to serve a nice wine and to be dangerous. I don't have to be the best. It's just for everyone out there that can use a little bit of your expertise.
Like, what are those quick tips you could give us that are just easy?
So the only thing I would say was, why not be the best? Let's get the best wine for whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how do I pick that up? Right, besides going to Google.
Right.
Going to bar.
Well, let me ask you this. What are you planning on having for dinner for your Christmas dinner?
So every year we do a different theme. Yeah. And this year our theme is we're going to do Indian food for Christmas.
Indian food for Christmas.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I love that. So we do a theme. Thanksgiving we do traditional family foods, but for Christmas we do a theme.
That's really fun.
Yeah.
That's great.
So
I'm coming over.
Yeah, you're welcome. Everyone's welcome. Yeah. Tell me, what does that look like? How can I pair some of these foods?
So
maybe more spicier.
The general rule is if you're going to have a spicy food, you get a slightly sweeter wine.
Okay.
Because the sweet will offset the spicy. Mm. Okay. If you get something that's not, the alcohol will actually make the spice even hotter.
Okay.
And then it gets a little bit, And so it's kind of, it's a little bit counterintuitive. Yeah,
so you would not pick a dry champagne, you'd pick a sweeter champagne.
If you were going to do champagne, but the just off the top of my head, the perfect match for Indian food would be a Riesling.
No, I think in the back of my mind, Riesling is super sweet.
I do too.
And that's that's very, very common.
They have dry Rieslings, yeah.
There is six levels of Riesling, from super sweet to dry.
Yeah. Okay.
And actually, from in the sommelier's world, the Riesling is the most easily paired wine. Actually, equal with sparkling wine or champagne, my favorite, than any other wine. And one of the reasons is the Riesling has so many different levels. And the other thing that the master sommelier that taught me, it was one of his favorite things. He says, I drink Riesling all day while I'm thinking about what I'm going to drink for dinner.
Your go-to wine is Riesling.
Yeah. So what would be wine? Like a, it's not too sweet, but it would offset the spicy.
So you want to go with, if you're looking for some just dry
Give me a couple names.
So a dry Riesling. And I would go.
Oh, we're going to go there. We're going to name people. Okay.
Names or blends. Something.
So I'm more like into region than I am.
Okay, a region. So something that I can find.
I don't think
he
ever drinks blends. You said the bad word.
No. Let me answer this, and I'm going to attack that.
Can you answer my question?
Yeah. So I would.
I'm taking notes
she
here.
Needs help.
I would do. So I would go to Germany. Have to actually travel
getting
to
on
Germany.
Plane. I'm off.
I would look in the German region of
about
either
like Alsace Lorraine.
Alsace is great, or another great wine for any of it would be a Gewürztraminer.
I like that one.
Gewürztraminer.
I do like theirs.
That's a little bit sweeter. There's not many dry levels of Gewürztraminer.
It is good.
But that's great with Indian food. So you want to stick with Germany or Alsace, which is kind of the northern, almost touching Switzerland.
Got it. Mm-hmm.
So South Coast Winery, which is in Temecula, actually makes a great Gewürztraminer. Well, I can't say that. So FYI, if you need that for Indian food,
that's fantastic.
Great.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Paula.
Yeah. So that would be my recommendation. So
how about you, Paula?
What are you having for dinner?
So I'm Italian, and that is a recurring theme year over year in every holiday. So not only am I Italian, but I don't eat meat. I only eat seafood.
Wow.
So I make a butternut squash pasta dish with shrimp, and there's a sauce that I make that's got Parmesan in it. It's all grated from scratch with pureed butternut squash and garlic. So that's usually our main meal, and then there's some quote-unquote healthy sides. They're as healthy as
I'm so hungry.
That I'm Italian. So what would you drink with that? What would you
recommend? That goes to another one of my favorites happens to be the varietal in the champagne. That's Chardonnay, left, right, upside down. That's all the way.
So what do you do for a girl like me who doesn't like white wine unless it's bubbles? I know.
You don't like white wine? You don't like Chardonnay?
I don't know. I would do bubbles or red always, but you wouldn't put any kind of red with that, would you?
So I have a backup, and that's our next wine here. So
nice.
If you're not going to do Chardonnay, I would say bubbles.
Yeah.
Bubble goes with anything, I'll think. Letitia and I were at an event the other day. Actually, Louis Roeder, it was Cristal.
Mm-hmm.
Eight courses? Seven courses?
Oh, my
gosh.
Every course was a vintage of Cristal.
It was amazing.
It was
one
of the most amazing foodie wine nights
had to be incredible.
Of our life, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then if not, I would do a mild red, which would be like either a Pinot Noir.
Well, I like Pinot.
Yeah, I like Pinot. We can go with that.
What's a good Pinot that you can recommend?
Pinots have a reputation, though, to be all over the place. I went to a Pinot tasting up in around UCLA at the Getty Museum up there a while ago. And it just reinforced what I always thought. There's great ones and there's bad ones. It doesn't seem to be a defined style.
Oh, it depends on
style.
The region,
well,
right?
And the point and being
the maker,
that there's certain...
Your taste.
We've developed Chardonnays to taste a certain way, buttery or malolactic acid or whatever they put into it. But we've developed certain flavor profiles that seem to sell well. Mm-hmm. Pinot doesn't seem to have a flavor profile that's been defined yet.
Okay. Hold that. I got two things to address back with you, but Paula.
Yes.
Getting back to the Chardonnay. Not that it applies to you because you don't like white wine, but we're across the board here. So the trend now is on Chardonnays. The California Chardonnays have always been about big oak, big butter, really buttery.
The malolactic acid, that buttery taste.
I had
fermentation.
No idea about this, by the way, until I met Bart. And then all of a sudden, now I can taste the butter, and I can taste the oak, and I can...
Because malolactic acid somehow, which was an impurity, they thought, for a long time, actually has a butterly flavor.
So the trend, especially here, the California wines were always big and buttery, and I hesitate to tell what the sommelier world calls those big buttery wines, but the trend has been to kind of back off on that, to be more like, if I'm out and I have a choice, I'm going for a Burgundy, which is where Chardonnay is from in France. It's going to be a lot less. And then if I'm really lucky, Chablis, which is the northernmost point of Burgundy, and that's actually no oak or light malolactic, but no oak at all.
Who was the first? Wasn't it Mike Gergich and Gergich Hills? It was one of the first big buttery Chardonnays.
Yeah, he's the one that won that big contest in 1975
or 1973 or 1974 or something. Yeah.
1975 or 1976. Yeah, and
he was the first
on the map.
California winemaker to go compete in France and won. Nobody thought California wine was worth a ding dong.
Amazing,
and he really pushed this. Sure, I got to meet him a couple times many years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Milyenko. So there's
I could tell you some funny stories about Milyenko if you want to hear.
There's three great documentaries. They're all Psalm 1, 2, and 3. Psalm 1 was actually the best because that follows a handful of people that were studying to take the Master Sommelier test.
Right.
Super intense. And you learn a lot, actually, as a viewer. Psalm 2 was good, and then Psalm 3, which I just watched, really kind of focuses more on the different wines and the different regions. So
can I tell you my two Milyenko guys? I'm assuming he's no longer alive.
Well, while you're doing that, it's time. We've exhausted our bubbles, so now I think we need to go to the Pinot Noir.
I think it's only appropriate.
This girl over here who loves red wine
long.
Is dying today.
I can tell you this show's going to go long today, folks, here. So if you used a half-hour show, it's going to go longer today here.
We're going to be here all night.
We're going to be
here
all day.
We're just getting settled in, people.
Music.
Love that. So here's my Milyenko Gergich story. This is from the 80s. I had a chance to go to an event because one of the things you wouldn't fit with my cargo pants is I was a restaurant writer for the Riverside Press Enterprise at one point in time.
I'm telling you, all these little secrets.
Yeah, you wouldn't guess that. So I really do enjoy good food and good wine. And I know enough about it to be dangerous, not enough to on Bart's level. And so I got to go to a special event, and Milyenko was there, Mike Gergich, the man who put California wines on the map here. And what a funny little guy in his little beret. And the two things I guess I can say about him is I went up to him, and I had a, I don't know, let's say 1984, whatever was supposed to be a good year for his wine. And I'd been holding it for years, afraid to drink it. And I said, "What should I do, Mike?" He said, "You must drink it. Quit holding the stuff." And then, as I'm trying to talk to him, he's pinching my wife's butt and comes up to her and puts his arm around her and says, "Do you have a sister? I'm looking
That's
for something."
So wrong.
And this guy was like so old-fashioned European Italian pinch the girl's butts kind of thing here. And I was so shocked. And so he signed a poster. We still have it in our house, and it says, "To the beautiful Jan," and my wife's name is Jan, "to the beautiful and gorgeous Jan," or whatever, and to Paul.
You know your place there, Paul.
Yeah, and Paul. I mean, he was a real, you know, fanny-pinching ladies' man. I'm sorry to say, Milyenko.
Wow.
And that's not what I pictured at all here.
Wow. Okay, circle back, because I need to know more about this wine that's in front of me. We got to bring the train back.
All right, bring the train back.
All right, so Pinot Noir. Again, since I brought the wine, I brought my favorites, right? Mm. So I brought the champagne. Pinot Noir, certainly one of my favorite varietals.
If you're watching us on YouTube, hold on.
And so do you disagree with my statement that Pinot Noirs have a wide, can be widely different, or are they all, have they created a flavor profile that basically sells and they all stick to?
So there definitely is a profile, but they certainly are different. So I think I've covered all the sides. So from Burgundy, and now we're going to get really, really technical. So Burgundy is considered old world
wine.
Don't
look at the clock. We'll go long today. We'll give you extra time to do it.
Old world wine. So anything outside of Europe is, or in Europe is old world. Anything outside is called new world. Okay. Old world is going to be a little more earthy, less fruit forward, slightly less in alcohol. That's why Europeans can drink wine all day and feel
really
great.
That makes sense.
Wait, there's so less you're sun. Describing the old world and new world, but how do I understand what that is on these bottles?
So I'm building.
Got it.
Okay.
So that's what we're not drinking, but I'm just trying to give. That's where
which
Pinot
one
Noir.
Are we not, which one are we not drinking? Old world or
old
new
world?
World?
Which
not
is literally world. France or Germany
Europe.
Or whatever.
Got it.
European
yeah.
wine. Yeah.
Thank you.
So that's where Burgundy originated from. And mm-hmm. then there's all this history, et cetera, et cetera. And then the grapes started growing in California, primarily mm-hmm. Sonoma, Napa. So Napa is more, and I'm going to get to here because I'm going to address this before you cut us off on the blend thing. I'm going to set you straight. So Napa is considered more of a Bordeaux style, which is Sauvignon Blanc and Cabernet Sauvignon, for the two basics.
Okay.
And then Sonoma, which is one valley over, mm-hmm. is
over
more
the mountain, yeah.
is more Burgundian, which mm-hmm. would be Chardonnay and Pinot Noir.
And which is, I'm trying to remember, France, is Burgundy south of Bordeaux or north? I don't remember the relationship to the two areas.
It's actually more east.
East, okay.
Yeah.
Towards the ocean. All right. Maybe.
Close to the water. I think it's the North Sea that's there. So in any event, the Pinot Noirs in California are going to have the same profile, mm-hmm. but because it's warmer here, it's going to be a little more sweet, a little more fruit forward. Mm-hmm. And
as opposed to the Oregon Pinot Noirs, that's what they're known
no,
for.
As opposed to the old world.
And the old world, okay, all right.
And they're going to have a little more alcohol, a higher alcohol, like more in the 14, 14.5, because yeah. it's warmer here, and that creates a higher alcohol, which is why all us Californians can take two or three glasses.
And alcohol comes from sugar, right? How much sugar?
Sugar, and then the sun is what helps to make the grapes sweeter, which
right.
is where that comes from.
More sugar means sugar turns into alcohol.
So what I've noticed personally is the Santa Ynez, which is our from where we live, the closest up in Santa Barbara County, and then Ventura County, Monterey, and then Sonoma. I like to profile as it gets higher, a little bit closer to the ocean.
Higher elevation or higher?
North versus south.
Got it.
Because it's colder.
It's a little bit cooler.
Got it.
And then for those who don't know, Pinot Noir is a very, very, and I'll say this very gently with two women in the room, they're very temperamental grapes, very sensitive.
Sensitive.
And what they really like, this is really going to really go in many different directions, but the grape really likes is a great difference in temperature. So closer to the coast, so really cool, damp evenings, mm-hmm. and then hot days, and then cool, damp evenings.
Which is what I always heard. I know Temecula is not is in the same level and never has developed the same reputation as the regions in the north, but there is a pass in the mountains that allows you, the mountains run north and south, and allows the ocean breeze to come into Temecula and cool it down. And that's why they thought Temecula was a good region to grow wine.
So what I've realized is that they, even though it's the same profile, there's definitely, pour yourself, Paul.
I got it.
There are.
I like having women pour me wine. I don't know.
There are winemakers of Pinot Noir in California that do a much, for lack of a better term, kind of a lighter, I call it a little more Kool-Aid version.
Ooh, wow.
Which is
like
not,
it's good,
which
huh?
is not wow. my mm-hmm. personal
wow,
favorite.
That is really good.
This is Arista from Sonoma Valley, one of my personal favorites, which is, to me, if you look at the color, how much deeper.
Very dark.
If we compare this, and I'm not saying one, this is personal taste. I'm just telling you, this between like a La Crema Pinot Noir, the La Crema would be much lighter in color. It would be much lighter in flavor. This is much deeper and darker and more substantial, in my opinion. And
it has good legs too. I'm not trying to be difficult here with women in the room, but this has nice legs.
Can you explain that? I've always heard those stories. So you swirl the glass around,
yeah.
and then all of a sudden you see it dripping, and then they talk about the legs. Can you explain what that really is? Because I hear about it, I watch it in videos, but I have no idea really what
so it's the technical word
we're talking with two women who have short skirts on right, and we're gonna talk about legs here, but these are this
Paul,
wine is
let's get back to wine. Let's get back to wine.
This is very
focus
good
Paul
focus. Focus. All right. Focus.
So technically it's the viscosity, but in simple terms
the thickness of it,
yeah. It's the amount of sugar and alcohol.
Oh, interesting.
So the heavier the legs, the more sugar and alcohol. So,
oh, but what does that do? Does it mean it's a better wine, or what does that really mean? Just more sugar and alcohol?
Yeah. So if you did this compared to an old world Burgundy, you'd probably see less legs on the
So that just simply tells you what it's composed of. This has more sugar and more alcohol in it, so therefore it drips thicker.
Right. So the deductive wine tasting process that I've taught is there's a couple of prongs. First, it's sight. So you look.
Wait, what do you mean prongs? Can you explain what you're getting
different,
at?
Like different prongs, like
different
first
things
it's sight, and then it's sight, and then smell.
The
and
components
then taste.
You're looking for, the four prongs. Or five different
yeah,
things.
Yeah, no, I just needed to explain it. So, okay.
So the first thing you do is you swirl, and you want to check. You
I'm
going to
do this at Christmas, by the way.
The color.
How does it look? And okay, then and then swirl it, which opens up
now
the
I have legs.
Which does what? It opens
thick
up
legs.
It gets some of the aroma going.
Gets the aroma, and then it would also if it's going to have legs, it'll show you if there's legs. Mm-hmm. What you're smelling for is everything or anything. Does it have earth? So when I took
what does it mean? Does it have earth? What does there smell like?
Earth is a particular. It's a flavor profile that it literally smells a little kind of like dirt.
Bart,
I'm sorry
Bart,
to
you're
say.
You're the expert in the room. None of us know what we're talking
right?
about. We need help.
Earth is kind of a. It has
I deal with money every day.
It's something once you taste it, you go, yeah, that has an earthy kind of flavor to it.
So if this was a Pinot Noir from Burgundy, France, I would smell it, and I would smell the taste characteristics are. May sound really funny. Forest floor. Dark leaves.
What it reminds
sort
of you of.
Tobacco, right. Those sort of things.
Wow.
In California, the first thing I smell is fruit. I smell like a dark berry, like a blackberry, dark cherry. And then the process is, you know, after, so it's sight, so you're looking at it, looking at the color. If you move it, the rim, if the rim is a lot lighter than the center, that means you can get an idea of the age.
Oh, wait. Explain it.
Say that again. That I didn't know.
So, so it separates here. How do I know it's different in age?
So, because this one, doesn't help that I already know, but this one's in 2016, so you're not going to see a huge, huge difference. But if the outer rim was much, much, much lighter, and then it actually carried forward a little bit, so it wasn't just a thin rim, but a thick rim, that would give you an idea that the wine was older. So, you know, part of my test was
so it deepens and darkens in color in the middle as it gets older. Is that what you're saying?
Like it.
Yeah.
No, the opposite. It gets lighter and lighter on the edges as it gets older.
Right in the middle, it's dark.
Right, the middle is always going to be the same color, but it will the edges will the age will
lighten.
Yeah,
will
as it softens. Yeah, right.
Correct.
Okay, you talked about things you smell from forest floor to
forest
dark
floor,
leaves
to
berries.
And all these things,
This is going to sound like a really silly question, but how do you train your nose to pick out those different things?
Exactly.
I want to know that.
And I will say this, having been around people like Bart before, we'll all taste a wine and I'll say, tastes good. Or I can taste, and they say, well, go deeper. I can taste a little bit of fruit or something. People who write these reviews and who really know can discern many more subtle characteristics than the normal human can.
So I think anything, given enough time, you can learn and practice. And I will just be completely honest. My natural taste and smell is not as amazing as some of the other sommeliers. Mm-hmm. I was great academically. I could study. I did the maps. I did all that. That was the easy part for me. The hard part was this.
Training your nose.
Unlike my 3-year-old, who from almost out of the get-go, everything I do, anything I ever do, the first thing she wants to do is smell. So I absolutely know I have a sommelier in training. But there are those, and there are some who will argue this, just like, hey, someone's in great shape, they're good genetics, you can argue that. But I certainly believe there are some who just have this natural, they can taste or smell. But with anything, practice, and I passed.
And I'll give you an example of that. We had somebody tell me years ago, that this had to do with wine tasting, so it'll sound strange. In Alaska, if you talk to the Eskimo native culture, they have 20-some words for snow. To them, it's obvious that there's a different kind of snow. To us, it all just looks like white, fluffy, frozen stuff. We only have one word in English for snow. So similarly, if you're trained, you can instantly notice different subtle characteristics that everybody else just lumps together here.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
So it's quite interesting. So is it Pinot Grigio? Bart, is that the one?
Yes, that's okay. A white wine.
Okay, so there's a white wine.
He cringed when you said
Yeah, because I, by the way, that's just do party not wine. Have the same experience as Bart does with wine, but we go to events, and sometimes they have wine, and he's like, hey, try this one or try that one, and then he asks for my opinion, and
right.
just to try to kind of get an idea, and then he's like, so do you taste the peppers? Do you taste this?
And then all of a sudden
I start to taste it, and I start to, like, points it out.
If somebody points out, you start to notice. Otherwise, exactly. It just tastes good.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask Bart a question. Mm-hmm. This is one I've always loved. I've never asked a sommelier. And again, I'll frame it in a different way. 100 years ago, when I was out dating, I dated a girl who had a PhD in art history. And she took me to the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. And walked me around trying to explain all this art because I know nothing about art. And she said, what do you think of that? And I say, that's pretty. That's nice. And she, at the end, she said, you know, I wish I could react to art like you do. You like it or you don't? She said, I have to tear it all apart and analyze it. She said, no longer am I capable of just tasting and going, that's good. By knowing so much about it, does it take away from some of the just pure pleasure of drinking it?
You know what? Most of the time.
I actually think that's a great question.
I would agree, yeah.
And where it applies the most, and you mentioned it earlier, if it's served in like a bad glass, do I even want to drink this?
Yeah,
it's a plastic cup. Like, do I want to waste my time?
Yeah.
It's sad.
And a plastic cup will change the flavor?
Yeah. So
tell us, what does that mean?
So you love wine and you learned about it, but in so learning about it, it's the same way I feel. I studied film a lot, and sometimes I find myself analyzing the film rather than just sitting back and enjoying the story.
It.
Yeah.
I think it's with anybody who studies anything. But the issue on glasses, and if I'm a skeptic on pretty much everything in life, and I have to be shown, proven.
Good to know.
I didn't
mental
know that.
Note.
Didn't know that. Okay.
So, a wine glass will change the taste. I'm like, yeah, right. So I've done this now four times. Riedel, a great wine glass manufacturer.
Probably one of the more famous. No.
Yeah, it's certainly one of the most famous. And actually, I have a sidebar story on that. But
we're going to go as long as you want to go. This is a full hour show here, folks. Just don't even look at the thing. How often do I get a chance to talk to a master sommelier?
No, just certified sommelier, not master.
Certified sommelier who's willing and able to bring in some absolutely spectacular wines. This is a treat for me and for anybody listening today.
I don't want to sidetrack you, but there is a difference between a master sommelier and a certified sommelier.
Yeah, it's two levels up.
So at some point, I'd love for you to answer that in the show. Side note.
All right. Yeah. So I've got two things. I got to address the blend and I got to address the master. So we're going to talk about glasses now. So four times I've attended a seminar of glasses because I wasn't convinced the first, second, or third time. Right.
You thought it's just a marketing trick to get you to buy more glasses.
Yeah, it was like smoke and mirrors.
Right.
And so they would put different glasses, looked relatively the same. One was specifically a white wine glass, and then one was Pinot Noir, Cabernet Sauvignon, Sauvignon Blanc.
And they're dramatically different shapes. Go look them up online. I mean, they're dramatic.
Some dramatic, some not as dramatic as you might think.
They're more pinched at the top or more...
Some might.
Or
fuller at the bottom.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So they would pour, like, say, a Pinot Noir in four different glasses, and they would have us taste each. And believe it or not, I couldn't believe it. Like, the Pinot Noir, I'm like... At the time, I didn't actually know which was a Pinot Noir glass, but I was like, this is when they taste the best. Flip it over, Pinot Noir glass.
There you go.
Oh,
absolutely.
My goodness.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just because of the glass.
And what does it do? I think I've read, but I'd rather you tell me rather than me guess and tell you my incorrect assumptions.
Yeah, tell me why. How?
How does a different shape or size of a glass bring out the best in a certain type of wine?
I'll be honest. Some of it is unexplainable, just like, hey, my watch works. I'm not sure how it works, but it works.
Right.
But the other, the more technical part is the way that the air attacks or approaches the wine and how your nose is able to breathe it.
Some of them
it.
You want a bigger top so that the air can oxidize it or whatever, and some of them you don't. You want to concentrate it and focus it.
Which is why no one said anything. I'm surprised, especially you, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I poured your champagne in what kind of glasses? Wine glasses.
Wine glasses, yes, right. Champagnes are usually flutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So here's a new trend as well.
You do that all the time.
Yeah. So the new thing is, from a taste standpoint, champagne actually, for everyone listening, actually tastes better in a white wine glass because you can actually, it has ability to breathe. You can get your nose in there. the whole concept of the tall,
narrow
flute
yeah.
was just for visibility. It was the bubbles.
Oh, it was more aesthetic.
Yeah. So I now at home, I still have a a small set of flutes, but we have specific redo.
Oh, do you have wine glasses for all the different?
Yes. I got hook, line, and sinker. At the fourth seminar, I'm like, I need one of this, I need one of this, I need one of this.
And I'm going to tell you that having looked at the Riedel site, I'm going to say there's a dozen different types of glasses. There's a lot of different types of glasses.
Wow.
From champagne flutes to big goblet style things to the Pinot Noir ones where they have kind of a pinch top.
We inherited some from my wife's grandmother, these beautiful crystal, super beautiful. We put them on the top shelf there.
Look good.
Okay.
I'm getting ones just to make her happy.
Yeah.
So here's some trivia. You've heard or seen the stemless wine glasses?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. My wife loves those.
Yeah. How do you think they came about?
People breaking wine glasses.
I know. That's exactly what I thought.
So Riedel is several generations.
Mm-hmm.
So generation three, grandchildren of the founders.
We need to have them on your show. We need to reach out to them.
I think that's a great idea.
Hold on.
I bet they don't get a chance to talk about this too often. Yeah.
So grandchild living in downtown New York, small houses, small kitchen, small storage. Takes his Riedel wine glass and tries to fit it into the
cabinet space.
The cabinet, and he's like, "Bomb doesn't fit."
Oh wow!
And all of a sudden, ding, 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 ding. What if
we got rid of the stem?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we have stemless glasses.
And yet, I've noticed that when I've gone to, I've been to some big fancy wine tastings, usually as a restaurant critic. And most of the people who work in wineries,
wait, can you just stop there? As a restaurant critic.
Yeah, I was a restaurant critic.
Let's come back to that.
I was a restaurant critic for a number of years for the Riverside Press Enterprise. Oh, yeah. For the Riverside Press Enterprise and a couple other papers, I wrote lots of... I'll show them to you sometime.
We're going to start interviewing you. Yeah. Be careful.
Most of the people...
It's all coming out with this wine, by the way. We're going to feed Paul more wine. Has comments, but tonight, it's like the best.
I'm bashing this notion that I'm just a, bore. That I'm just a...
You're not a spectator, by the way.
Most of the people that work in wineries seem to hold it at the bottom, which I never see the public do. They hold it and they swirl it from the bottom, as opposed to holding the stem or the
Right, so let me, I'll explain all three. People aren't going to like this one either, but my personal opinion, it's a little pompous holding the bottom.
Right.
It's not my deal. The stem, for sure. The reason you don't want to hold this is you don't want to change the temperature of the wine.
Exactly. Because my father was a Cuvassier drinker, and he loved the idea of holding in the palm of his hand and heating it up just ever so slightly to get the aroma up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So for that reason, going back to the stemless, in the hierarchy of glasses, I'll do a regular glass. I will do a stemless before I'll do a red, solo cup.
Really, Bart?
Well, we've done solo cups are appropriate in certain times.
Plastic
but,
party cups.
Yeah.
So is there a reason that they hold it at the base, any other than the stem?
Maybe a trend. I mean, there's no difference on the wine. It's maybe a comfort level. Not my thing. I like the stem.
Never seen anybody do it except at wineries. I see people do it a lot. They hold the stem. I mean, the base rather than the stem.
I'm not coordinated enough. I would certainly.
I know. I'd be afraid to try it.
Okay, tell me about this whole blend situation that you mentioned a few times.
Yes, let's address that.
Yeah, let's address the blend.
All right. So the most expensive wines in the world.
Blends are.
Paul.
I like blend.
Paul, tell me what a Bordeaux wine is.
A Bordeaux wine would be something from the Bordeaux region of France. That's all I know.
So what's the varietal?
Well, we all think of red, but obviously they grow different wines in Bordeaux. But I would think of a Cabernet that's from
Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah. Right.
So that is the primary red, but it is a blend. The most expensive wines in the world are Bordeaux. Actually, Burgundian wines are more expensive if you get like the really, really good ones. But Bordeaux wines are a combo, depending if it's left bank or right bank. I don't want to get too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a blend of of Cabernet Sauvignon.
And Cabernet Franc.
Merlot, and then Cabernet Franc.
Yeah.
And they're blends. And if you come to California, have you heard of Screaming Eagle?
Yes.
Yes. Right.
All right. It's a blend. It's primarily Cabernet Sauvignon.
So answer me, riddle me this. So one of the things I always heard. Is it California really pioneered this idea of a vintage, of a year, of this, no blend. This is this wine from this year, from this
Vintage,
yeah, right. This area that we're these wines come from this place and at this time, but in France and in Italy, it's more important the region than it is the fact that it's just they don't care about blends.
So Old World, France, Italy, it's a kind of a combo because they're the whatever wine it is that they're making will be known for either one varietal or a combo like Bordeaux, mm-hmm. and it will typically be if it's a vintage, it'll be all those years. In California, and here's where it comes to personal preference as well. So a lot of California and Napa are Cabernet Sauvignon, mm-hmm. And there are people who love them. For myself, I like a Cabernet Sauvignon if I'm eating food, especially something like a red meat, something yeah. Paula would not eat.
Right.
Because
they're more acidic and they'll handle that.
Well, the tannins will help kind of cut right. the steaks. But for me, if I'm just going to sit and like relax, I'm not going to pour myself a Cabernet Sauvignon. I'll pour myself a Pinot Noir or a nice blend of something.
Or Riesling, even, you said. Yeah,
or Riesling if it's earlier in the day.
So I'd like to know, is there any particular wine that you just don't care for? Mm-hmm. We already know you're not a Prosecco fan. I get that. But is there anything else that you don't care for with any meal?
Yeah, so
Pinot Grigio.
I know.
Oh, there we go.
I was just going to say, I kind of gave it away with the peppers.
Pinot Grigio, yeah.
So that's the obvious one for me. And it's not that it's bad. It's just this is personal preference.
Uh-huh. But it's considered summer picnic kind of wine. It's just like white Zinfandel. It's something people like, but it's not really that sophisticated.
But there is
white
another
Zinfandel.
One. But there, yeah, that was when I was 18.
Yeah.
That's bad. Yeah. But the other one, and people love this wine. And again, you're asking me, so this is my personal preference.
Right.
I am not a fan of Sauvignon Blanc,
okay.
which is a white wine. Mm-hmm. But I need to kind of split that because
a lot of people make them.
New World, especially, nothing against the Kiwis, nothing against Australia.
Yeah, they're huge in it, right?
They're huge, and they're making a bunch of money, but it's because of the heat, because of the sun. It's a little sweeter, and the grass and the green bell pepper mm-hmm. flavor comes out, which is I'm not a fan of.
Hmm.
I will tell you, and actually, Letitia and I were at a dinner the other night, and they had a Sauvignon Blanc from Sancerre, which is a region in France, and that, you know, for like the salad course, was delicious.
Let me give you one that I particularly like, and you don't see much of, and I actually had a conversation with Milenko mm-hmm. Gergic mm-hmm. about this. True Zinfandel, not white Zinfandel, the party wine, but true Zinfandel, which can be very spicy, earthy. Nobody knows really where Zinfandel comes from. The assumption is they've traced it back to like Croatia or something, which is where Mike Gergic is from originally. But you don't see much real hardy Zinfandels like you see up in Northern California or something. Because, again, it's a varietal. They're not sure really where it came from. It's a California wine that came from somewhere and got planted here. And nobody knows exactly where in the Old World it came from, right?
So the theory is actually, you're right, Croatia. Maybe Italy. And Paso Robles is doing an amazing job with Zinfandels. Mm-hmm. And from a boldness and tannin level, probably something just
real
below
strong, real
Cabernet
heavy.
Sauvignon.
Yeah, right.
So, again, for myself personally, that's if I'm having food, I'll drink it. But just like to sit and drink it,
right.
A little much for me.
Right. Okay, well, that's one I like a lot that you don't see a lot.
Okay, so there's two things I want to bring up.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be on the
just
spot.
Two? Just
well, you know.
We got about 10 minutes to go here.
Okay,
right?
So
We'll go full hour here.
One I want to say is, Bart, do you want to share your story? So we had a client appreciation meeting.
He's already making faces.
And at the
like,
end
no.
of this dinner, do you want to share the story? You need me to share the story. I'm going to share the story. Okay, so at the end of the dinner, it's been a great evening. We had a lot of clients there, prospects, opportunities. And at the end of the day, a few of us at the very end and some of the partners were all deciding to stay a little bit longer and have another glass of wine.
Right.
So we grabbed a bottle upstairs at the Montage in Laguna Beach. And
she's such a name dropper.
Well, it's a nice place and it has a nice variety of wine.
Spectacular place. Yeah,
a nice variety of wine.
So expensive
they come
as
out,
hell. Okay,
we
go ahead.
Order this beautiful bottle of wine, red wine, and then
client put in a bag.
The client decided and bring it out. And then we all put Bart on the spot.
The client wanted to call me out.
Yeah.
This was a prospect moment for a client moment.
Yeah. So just FYI, yeah. this is sometimes how it goes.
Can I ask you a question? Was the client trying to prove how knowledgeable they were and hoping Bart would...
It was a test.
Bart would confirm this?
Correct.
Okay.
Oh, I need to hear more.
So this is a good one. Yeah. So by the way, I'm leading up to this story. So
again, Bart might somehow really show that they don't know what they think they know.
So we were drinking during the entire afternoon while we were having dinner. And by the way, so he's probably had a few drinks at this point, so maybe not as sharp as he probably would at the very beginning of the day.
He's sharp all the time.
Okay. Always. But just so we're clear. And we're sitting out by the fire, and it's beautiful, and people were friendly. And then literally the guy comes out, and he goes to Bart.
What is it?
What is this that we're drinking?
Oh, he wants to
And the bottle's gone, by the way. Yeah. They poured a glass for everybody sitting there.
You're Mr. Smart.
And
you're Mr.
the bottle
Certified.
Is gone. On the spot. So he's had a few drinks, and then he's like, by the way, what are we drinking? And Bart was amazing. He explained the type of wine, the region of the wine, the actual wine maker, and the year that it was made. And not only that,
how do you think
he told us the different fruits and the things that he smelled like the... Oh my God, we were all floored. We were amazed.
Letitia, let me stop you right there. Having been a restaurant critic and having met master sommeliers, and by the way, I know that's the next level or two up. How many master sommeliers are there? 100 or something?
199.
That's it. In the whole world, there's 200 people. And to pass that level of test, even at Bart's level, a notch or two down, they give you a blind tasting. Describe what they make you
do.
Sure.
Yeah. So 8 in the morning, first thing we have to do is you have 15.
8 a.m.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
You taste a red wine, and then you taste a white wine. You have to tell all the exact same things. What the wine is, where it's from, and the vintage.
Yeah.
And then
this is 1984 Bordeaux something, whatever.
Right. Okay. And then from there, it's a couple hundred questions. And so you study the entire world, every single section, every area.
And to be a master sommelier, the ultimate accomplishment, of which there are only 200 people in the entire world, what do you have to do to pass that?
So the tasting is, instead of two, I think it's either 6 or 8. And they probably a little more sophisticated.
And you got to nail it. You got to tell this is a 1983. You can't say this is I think this is a Cabernet. You got to say this is a 1983 Cabernet from this specific region. And probably, do you have to name the manufacturer, or do you have to just get...
You call it the winemaker or the vintner.
Yeah, the vintner. You got to know
he
this.
He did. And then, by the way, this night he did. And he nailed
that's
it. And we
so
were all
incredible.
And what did the client do? Were they surprised? Yes. Were they pleased? Were they disappointed?
Please. Yeah, right.
It gave us a bunch of money.
Okay, wait. But this brings me to my other question, which is, explain to us the difference between a master sommelier and a certified sommelier. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So there's 4 levels of sommelier.
Okay. Right?
There's a level 1, which it takes something to pass. You have to have some knowledge and
probably
experience.
More just book knowledge.
More, but actually, that's exactly right. There's no tasting; it's book knowledge. And then a certified, where you actually call yourself a sommelier and you can actually work in the business, which I am. And that was a combination of the blind tasting, the academic part, and then the two difficult parts for me were certainly the tasting, and then even more excruciating was the service. Because as a finance guy, I've never worked in a restaurant. I've never been a server. I've never done anything like that.
Right.
But I had to serve a master sommelier, no pressure.
Jeez.
Which means how to pour it and how to present
it. So I had to open a bottle.
Yeah.
And by the way, the way I opened it today was more for fun.
For show, yeah.
Yeah, because when you open a bottle in the real world as a sommelier, no sound at all. Yeah, any sound, you're fired. Yeah. You're done.
Right.
Wow.
So I opened the bottle of sparkling. I had to serve him.
Because you don't want to interrupt the experience. It's supposed to be just subtle. You're supposed to be there, but not the focus of what's happening. Yeah.
So I had to serve the master, and then he had 3 imaginary friends. And as
I have a few imaginary friends.
So as I walked around the white linen table with holding my tray, opened the bottle, serving the sparkling wine, he said, well, I'm having this, my guest is having this, and that, and my wife is having this, and the other guest is having this. What wine should we have with this? And by the way,
what kind of
aperitif should I have? And then we're thinking of something afterwards, a digestif. Mm-hmm. So as I'm doing all this, No pressure, 199 of them. I got one of them right here asking me the question.
Wow.
And digestives are an interesting thing. If Paula is really Italian, she may grow up with things like grappa and stuff. The idea that you have something after the meal to help digest the meal.
So, pulled it off.
So exciting.
And a tip for everybody, if they're going to have a holiday party, where how do you serve wine? You only serve it from the right, is that correct?
You serve from the right.
Yeah, you don't come up on the left side.
Yeah,
I don't know why, but...
Yeah, Bart, can you give us a couple, like, tips for a traditional...
And you don't just plop it in the middle. There's a way to pour wine. You don't just glug, 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 glug until it's...
He is giving us some.
Yep, so, yeah, we try to avoid the glunk, glunk, glunk.
So you try and pour it down the side of the...
First of all, it's always the females first, so you go around the table, starting with the females, and then you go back around the table and do the males
From the right side,
The glasses, if they're lined up, if you're having a formal dinner, you have your white wine glass, and then your succession of other glasses. You may have two whites and then a couple of reds, and then you pour the first, and then the next.
And how do you pour? Do you, I know with beer, it's important to pour it down the side of the glass because you don't want it to foam up, but with wine, is it important to, do you just literally plop it into the middle, or do you try and pour it down the side of the...
Down the side. I mean, yeah, you want to have a little bit of...
So it doesn't splash and everything
right.
And then what else? And then how far do you fill it up? You don't. People always want to fill it up too far.
Yeah, that's actually that's a huge faux pas.
People think
hey, this is really nice. I'm giving you like a
big glass
of wine. That's the worst because you lose all the ability to smell and the oxygen into the
swirl
wine.
It and everything else.
Yeah. Okay.
I'd much rather have three glasses of wine from one glass than one huge glass.
It seems like I'm more friendly. I'm going to fill up your glass. We're going to enjoy this evening here, but you're not enjoying the flavor of the wine at that point in time.
Right.
So I want to also say, Bart, I know that we do wealth management during the day, and this is our main focus, but I know what you, as a hobby, this is fantastic, but also for Nobleman Magazine, you write some of your favorite wines. I know one of the last few articles, I don't know, Paula, do you know which magazine that was? He actually wrote about his top favorite wines, which
I'd
is a fantastic read, by the way.
Yeah, so in the issue that's currently out now,
so
there's... Yeah, so it's considered the winter issue. Mm-hmm. There's a few wines that Bart called out that would be excellent to pair with a holiday meal. And so I know that was really helpful for the readers of Nobleman, and it was helpful for me, period. As a consumer.
Me too.
I may have used some of
your suggestions. I'd love to get a copy, and I hope you'll attach it to the show notes. So others can find a link to that.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you I'm going to get the privilege since I went an hour instead of half hour. I'm going to get the privilege of the last question.
All right, here we go. Ready.
Question.
What do you say to those who say, I can't enjoy wine because I don't know enough about it?
Ooh.
And I'll prep question. While you're thinking that. I'll give you, we had Michael Houlihan in here, who you may not appreciate, but he certainly made a ton of money. He and his wife Bonnie created Barefoot Wines. The number one selling inexpensive, he doesn't want to call it cheap, but the entry level wine. And their philosophy was too many people stay away from wine because they think they're too stupid. I don't know what to do, so I'm gonna I feel foolish. I'm not gonna drink wine.
You
and they're
also
like,
say that one
and they're like, enjoy it, drink it. Here's everyday wine that you can start with, and we hope you develop an appreciation and go farther. But don't avoid wine just because you don't understand it. That was their philosophy, and they sold it to Gallo for $500 million or some crazy thing here.
So I think my response would be, and I'll lead up to it, so passing my sommelier test has been both a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
The blessing is I feel accomplished, and you know I feel like I've accomplished
And you've learned more about it, right?
Yeah. And the curse is whenever I'm out with anyone, friends,
us ordinary,
family,
mere mortals,
I sense intimidation. I sense awkwardness. Yeah, no one wants to, like, I never get wine for gifts anymore because they're afraid.
They'll offend you.
True.
Right. And they won't order it with you. And what? So I see this a lot of time. I know a lot of people who have a lot of money, who have a very good taste in other things, clothing, cars, painting, whatever, who avoid, like the plague, drinking wine because they don't want to look stupid or foolish.
So you know, my response to that is, in addition to drinking wine with me, is just drink what you like. I mean, that's as any sommelier would say, Doesn't matter what it is. You drink what you like.
So if you like white Zinfandel or Pinot Grigio, drink it.
Yeah, Blue Nun, you go
Blue
for it.
Blue Nun.
Even if it's Prosecco and Bart doesn't approve, you drink it.
Yeah. My mother loved Blue Nun.
But Boo Boo will be my favorite.
And my disclaimer for the whole show is these are all my opinions. It doesn't mean you have to agree with my opinions.
Because it is a starting point. It's a place you can go as far as you want with wine, but don't avoid it just because you don't feel like you know enough.
Yeah.
100%.
Exactly.
So let's cheers. Let's toast to
Thank you.
A great
I'm gonna stick my
show.
Hand in here.
Nice.
Mine's empty because I drank it all.
All right, everyone. Happy holidays. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for an amazing 2018. And I'm so looking forward to 2019, Bart.
Big things on the horizon.
Great
definitely.
Things. Big things. We look forward to seeing you next year. Cheers.
Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest Inc. and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest Inc. under SEC registration.